Thank you for the soma. Good evening, priest.
Good evening, warrior. May the gods smile upon your path.
And yours also. Mounting the stairs, he departed the temple and continued on his way through the city, walking. When he came to the purple grove, there were three moons in the heavens, small camp lights behind the trees, pale blossoms of fire in the sky above the town, and a breeze with a certain dampness in it stirring the growth about him. He moved silently ahead, entering the grove. When he came into the lighted area, he was faced with row upon row of motionless, seated figures. Each wore a yellow robe with a yellow cowl drawn over the head. Hundreds of them were seated so, and not one uttered a sound. He approached the one nearest him. "I have come to see Tathagatha, the Buddha," he said. The man did not seem to hear him. "Where is he?" The man did not reply. He bent forward and stared into the monk's half-closed eyes. For a moment he glared into them, but it was as though the other was asleep, for the eyes did not even meet with his. Then he raised his voice so that all within the grove might hear him. "I have come to see Tathagatha, the Buddha," he said. "Where is he?" It was as though he addressed a field of stones. "Do you think to hide him in this manner?" he called out. "Do you think that because you are many and all dressed alike, and because you will not answer me, that for these reasons I cannot find him among you?" There was only the sighing of the wind passing through from the back of the grove. The light flickered and the purple fronds stirred. He laughed. "In this you may be right," he admitted. "But you must move sometime, if you intend to go on living, and I can wait as long as any man." Then he seated himself upon the ground, his back against the blue bark of a tall tree, his blade across his knees. Immediately he was seized with drowsiness. His head nodded and jerked upward several times. Then his chin came to rest upon his breast, and he snored. Was walking across a blue-green plain, the grasses bending down to form a pathway before him. At the end of this pathway was a massive tree, a tree such as did not grow upon the world, but rather held the world together with its roots, and with its branches reached up to utter leaves among the stars. At its base sat a man, cross-legged, a faint smile upon his lips. He knew this man to be the Buddha, and he approached and stood before him. "Greetings, O Death," said the seated one, crowned with a rose-hued aureole that was bright in the shadow of the tree. Yama did not reply, but drew his blade. The Buddha continued to smile, and as Yama moved forward, he heard a sound like distant music. He halted and looked about him, his blade still upraised. They came from all quarters, the four regents of the world, come down from Mount Sumernu. The master of the north advanced, followed by his yakshas, all in gold, mounted on yellow horses, bearing shields that blazed with golden light. The angel of the south came on, followed by his hosts, the Kumbandas, mounted upon blue steeds and bearing sapphire shields. From the east rode the regent whose horsemen carry shields of pearl and who are clad all in silver. And from the west there came the one whose Nagas mounted blood-red horses, were clad all in red, and held before them shields of coral. Their hooves did not appear to touch the grasses, and the only sound in the air was the music, which grew louder. "Why do the regents of the world approach?" Yama found himself saying.
"They come to bear my bones away," replied the Buddha, still smiling.
The four regents drew rein, their hordes at their backs, and Yama faced them. "You come to bear his bones away," said Yama. "But who will come for yours?" The regents dismounted.
You may not have this man, O Death, said the Master of the North, for he belongs to the world, and we of the world will defend him. Hear me, regents who dwell upon Sumernu, said Yama, taking his aspect upon him. Into your hands is given the keeping of the world, but Death takes whom he will from out the world, and whenever he chooses. It is not given to you to dispute my attributes or the ways of their working. The four regents moved to a position between Yama and Tathagatha. We do not dispute your way with this one, Lord Yama, for in his hands he holds the destiny of our world. You may touch him only after having overthrown the four powers. So be it, said Yama. Which among you will be first to oppose me?
I will, said the speaker, drawing his golden blade.
Yama, his aspect upon him, sheared through the soft metal like butter, and laid the flat of his scimitar along the regent's head, sending him sprawling upon the ground. A great cry came up from the ranks of the Yakshas, and two of the golden horsemen came forward to bear away their leader. Then they turned their mounts and rode back into the north.
Who is next?
The regent of the east came before him, bearing a straight blade of silver and a net woven of moonbeams.
Aye,
he said, and he cast with the net.
Yama set his foot upon it, caught it in his fingers, jerked the other off balance.
As the regent stumbled forward, he reversed his blade and struck him in the jaw with its pommel. Two silver warriors glared at him, then dropped their eyes as they bore their master away to the east, a discordant music trailing in their wake.
Next, said Yama.
Then there came before him the burly leader of the Nagas, who threw down his weapons and stripped off his tunic, saying,
I will wrestle with you, Death God.
Yama laid his weapons aside and removed his upper guard.